This is the Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 7. Lord Shiva saves the universe by drinking poison. The summary of the 7th chapter is as follows. As described in this chapter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing in his incarnation as a tortoise, dove deep into the ocean to carry Mandara Mountain on his back. At first, the churning of the ocean produced Kalakuta poison. Everyone feared this poison, but Lord Shiva satisfied them by drinking it. With the understanding that when the nectar was generated from the churning, they would share it equally, the demigods and demons brought Vasuki to be used as a rope for churning rod. By the expert arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demons held the snake near the mouth, whereas the demigods held the tail of the great snake. Then, with great endeavor, they began pulling the snake in both directions. Because the churning rod, Mandara Mountain, was very heavy and was not held by any support in the water, it sank into the ocean. And this way, the prowess of both the demons and the demigods was vanquished. The Supreme Personality of Godhead then appeared as the form of a tortoise and supported Mandara Mountain on his back. Then the churning resumed with great force. As a result of the churning, a huge amount of poison was produced. The Prajapatis, seeing no one else to save them, approached Lord Shiva and offered him prayers full of truth. Lord Shiva is called Asutosh because he is very pleased if one is a devotee. Therefore, he has easily agreed to drink all the poison generated by the churning. The goddess Durga, Bhavani, the wife of Lord Shiva, was not at all disturbed when Lord Shiva agreed to drink the poison, for she knew Lord Shiva's prowess. Indeed, she expressed her pleasure at this agreement. Then Lord Shiva gathered the devastating poison, which was everywhere. He took it in his hand and drank it. After he drank the poison, his neck became bluish. A small quantity of the poison dropped from his hands to the ground, and it became the poison. Because of this poison, that there are poisonous snakes, scorpions, toxic plants, and other poisonous things in the world. Shishukuvacha Te Nagarajam Amantya
Te Nagarajam Amantya
Palabhagena Vasukim
Palabhagena Vasukim
Pariviya Griyo Tasmin
Pariviya Griyo Tasmin
Netram Adim Mudanvata
Netram Adim Mudanvita
Arebire surayata
Arebire surayata
Amritarte kurudvaha
Amritarte kurudvaha
Shishukuvacha
Shishukuvacha
Te Nagarajam Amantya
Te Nagarajam Amantya
Palabhagena Vasukim Pariviya girotasmin
Pariviya girotasmin
Netram adbim mudanvita Arebire surayata
Arebire surayata
Amritarte kurudvaha
Amritarte kurudvaha.
You want to go for it?
Shisuka upacha
Shishukuvacha
Tenaga.
Translation. Sukadeva Goswami said, "O best of the Kurus, Maharaj Parikshit, the demigods and demons summoned Vasuki, king of the serpents, requesting him to come and promising to give him a share of the nectar. They coiled Vasuki around Mandara Mountain as a churning rope, and with great pleasure they endeavored to produce nectar by churning the ocean of milk." couple of verses. There's no purport. Text 2, the personality of Godhead, Ajita, grasped the front portion of the snake, and then the demigods followed. Text 3, the leaders of the demons thought it unwise to hold the tail, the inauspicious portion of the snake. Instead, they wanted to hold the front, which had been taken by the personality of Godhead, and the demigods, because this portion was auspicious and glorious. Thus the demons, on the plea that they were highly advanced students of the Vedic knowledge and were all famous for their birth and activities, protested that they wanted to hold the front of the snake. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. There's a little bit of instruction about the difference between the demons and the demigods. Krishna is called the best of the cheaters. So here is an example how he's cheating. The demons thought that the front of the snake was auspicious and the catching hold of the portion would be more chivalrous. Moreover, daityas must always do the opposite of the demigods. That is their nature. We have actually seen this in relation to our Krishna consciousness movement. We are advocating cow protection and encouraging people to drink more milk and eat palatable preparations made of milk. But the demons, just to protest such proposals, are claiming that they are advanced in scientific knowledge, as described here by the words Swadhyaya Shuta Sampanaha. They say that according to their scientific way, they have discovered that milk is dangerous, and that beef obtained by killing cows is very nutritious. This difference of opinion will always continue. Indeed, it has existed since days of yore. Millions of years ago, there was the same competition. The demons, as a result of their so-called Vedic study, preferred to hold the side of the snake near the mouth. The Supreme Personality of Godhead thought it wise to catch hold of the dangerous part of the snake and allow the demons to hold the tail, which was not dangerous. But because of the competitive desire, the demons thought it wise to hold the snake near the mouth. If the demigods were going to drink poison, the demons would resolve, why should we not share the poison and die gloriously by drinking it? In regard to the words Swadhyaya Shruta Sampanaha Prakyata Janma Karma B. Another question may be raised. If one is actually educated in Vedic knowledge, is famous for performing prescribed activities, and has been born in a great aristocratic family, why should he be called a demon? The answer is that one may be highly elevated, educated, and may have been born in an aristocratic family, but if he is godless, if he does not listen to the instruction of God, then he is a demon. There are many examples in history of men like Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, and Kamsa who were well educated, who were born in aristocratic families, and who were very powerful and chivalrous in fighting, but who, because of deriding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, were called Rakshasas, or demons. One may be very well educated, but if he has no sense of Krishna consciousness, no obedience to the Supreme Lord, he is a demon. That is described by the Lord himself in the Bhagavad Gita 7.15. Namam duskritino mudha prapajante naradama mayaya prittigana asarimbhavama shita. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Asuram bhavam refers to not accepting the existence of God or the transcendental instructions of the personality of Godhead. Bhagavad Gita clearly consists of transcendental instructions imparted directly by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But asuras, instead of accepting these instructions directly, make commentaries according to their own whimsical ways and mislead everyone without profit even for themselves. One should therefore be very careful of demoniac, godless persons. According to the words of Lord Krishna, even if a godless demon is very well educated, he must be considered a mudha, naradama, and a maya prahitagana. Om agana timinandasya ganan gana shalakaya chaksurumilitanyena tasmai shi gurave namaha shi chaitanya manovistam stapitam inabhutaya svayam rupa karamayam darati svaparantitam vandeham shi guru shiyuta parakamalam shi gurun vaishnavamscha shi rupam sajajatam sahagana ragunat anvitam tam sajivam sadvetam sabarutam paridina sahita krishna chaitanya devam shi shi radha krishna padan sahagana lalita shi vishakam vitam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Swayam. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shrinivari Paschacharya Patayam. This point about the cows and the demons, Prabhupada makes a few times. Hiranyakasipu, he sent his men to kill cows and brahmanas, because brahmanas do yajna, and to do yajna they need ghee, so you need cows. So if there's no cows, then there can't be yajna, and then the demons can flourish more. So he said this is still going on, but now they do it by this propaganda that milk is bad, and that's a common thing, you know, to make people think, oh, these, even the didn't go over so big, but one scientist even saying that the greenhouse thing is all because of cows, because they pass a lot of gas and they belch a lot, and they should be killed. And I met one guy who was on Sankirtan, and he was drunk, but he was a professor of nutrition at some university. So I said something about milk, and he said, you don't know how bad milk is. And he started listing off all kinds of scientific, chemical talk about how bad milk is. And I said, but sir, you're drunk. And he said, well, you don't know how beer is so nutritious. And it's made from grains and full of vitamins. And he was a professor. I mean, he was really a professor. So he's the guy who's teaching in the university. Yeah. So this is, you know, what is going on in the world. And of course, then they do things like, you know, they get a bunch of people and they give them 1 liter of ice cold milk to drink really quick. And then they say, well, no, you know, they can't digest it, so milk's not meant for humans. Because, right? And then they have to sell you some kind of pill for digesting the milk. And people that are eating like every day ice cream and yogurt and cheese and so many things. And then if they stop all dairy products, they probably will get healthier. And then they say, well, that proves dairy products are no good. But they don't know what they're doing, and they and then by the time we get it, after it's gone through so much processing, it's not actually what it's supposed to be either. But this is the demons. So here, this is a very interesting leela that we're all familiar with. I'm especially familiar with it because in the Bangkok airport, they built a new airport, the biggest, well, I think now it's the second biggest, because these Asians are very competitive, you know. So Beijing, I think, built a bigger one. But anyway, it's a huge terminal. And when you first go in, right after you get the passport check, there's a huge diorama of this leela. A really big one, yeah. With the Ma mountain, and Krishna's standing on top, and then it's got the demons on one side, and the snake, and the whole thing. It's quite long. It's like 30 meters long, at least, maybe 40 meters long. And the demons are bigger than us, you know. And it's quite interesting. And the king of Siam told him to put that, you know, because he said it indicates unlimited prosperity or something. You know. So I guess getting the nectar out. So it's nice. Everybody takes pictures of it. And, you know, I don't know if they know what it is, everybody, but at least they see it. So the demons, actually Krishna wanted the demons to take the head because the head is fuming out all kinds of fire and poison. And so he knew that if the demigods took it, then the demons would demand. He said, okay, you can have it, you know. And then the demons feel very happy, but then they had to suffer when they're pulling and the head is all kinds of fire and poisonous smoke is coming out. So that's Krishna's trick. You know, Krishna's very tricky. And he's called the king of cheats or something like that. There's different names for Krishna. He knows how to cheat the demons. So this particular Leela, you know, it goes on and on. He incarnates. He comes first to have to carry the mountain, and he incarnates as a tortoise, and he has to sit on top of the mountain to balance it, and, you know, many, many different things that if we read on, we catch on to it. So the demons, these asuras, they're not just like, you know, some kind of dacoits or some kind of just low class. I guess they're low class, but they're not just, they're aristocratic, they're kings, and highly educated, they know the Vedas, and they know all the yajnas and all these things, but not, they're against Krishna, they're not devotees of Vishnu. And the Vedas, Krishna says, Trigunya Vishaya Veda, the Vedas deal mainly with the three modes of material nature. So I was just reading, Sanatana Goswami was explaining that, you know, the Vedas are for everyone, so the majority of people in the material world, they want material prosperity, so the Vedas deal mostly with those things, that the information about bhakti and Krishna being the Supreme Lord is not prominent. You know, if you just take a glance at the Vedas, you know, you don't just find that. That's why we have mercy to six Goswamis. It says, Nana Shastra, Vichara Naika Nipano, Saddharma, Samstapako. They studied very carefully all the scriptures. And then, so we see them quoting from all kinds of different Vedas about Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead and bhakti, because it's there. But on the surface, you know, because people mostly want other things, that's what they will find. So if someone reads the Shiva Purana, and Shiva is very, very great, very powerful, and almost the same as Vishnu, so they'll think, well, he's the Supreme Lord. It doesn't get in much. There may be a little bit there how he worships Krishna, but mostly they'll be bewildered by the power of Shiva. So they're puffed up. Janmaisvarya Shuti Shibir. They think they have a high birth. They come from a line of powerful demons. Famous fighters and kings, and they have lots of opulence, Aishwarya, and they're educated. They know, like Ravana, he knew so many Vedas. He had brahmanas doing yajnas all the time, but for material gain, not for spiritual gain. There's many different kinds of yajnas. So they're still demons. And then that pride of birth and education, and even beauty, they're not just, you know, ugly. So if one is actually educated in Vedic knowledge, but Vedas includes everything. So they may have all kinds of knowledge how to fight, you know, how to manipulate the material energy, build beautiful cities, transport themselves all over the universe, right? They can do all those things, but they're demons, asura, because they're against Krishna. And the demigods are different. The demigods are also have high birth and they're also educated, but they worship Krishna. Sometimes they forget, they become proud or they just become lazy because their life is very, very comfortable. But when it, we say in English, push comes to shove, or when things get, they'll always take shelter of the Supreme Lord. So we see that again and again. And sometimes the demons become more powerful because they're more lusty and they perform great, great tapasya to get their power and they really work at it because they want more and more. But the demigods become satisfied with their comfortable life and they don't do so much tapasya. So sometimes the demons will become more powerful. But the demigods then will take shelter of the Supreme Lord and then Vishnu will always come and he'll help them defeat the demigods or the demons. Like in this case, previous to this, the demons had become very powerful for that same reason. They had done so much tapasya and so the demigods couldn't defeat them. So Krishna said they should make a truce and that they should approach the demons with this proposal to churn the ocean and then they would get the nectar, the amrita, which is, means immortality, which is what everybody wants, right? Because it's the nature of the soul is immortal, so we don't want to die. Generally, people don't want to die. Some people... We could argue now there's a lot of suicide, but it's not, that's an exceptional case, and it's not exactly that they want to die, but they're just so frustrated with their life, and they think they can end their suffering by ending the body. Of course, that's not true. It's becoming more and more common now, suicide, for in different reasons. In America, I just heard that for young boys, high school age kind of, suicide is the main cause of death. And then they said, interesting, for those who question, you know, how can you live without sex, that for boys that are sexually active, the rate of suicide is 10 times higher than... They're more lusty, they're more frustrated, they're more, you know, experiencing, you know, heartbreak or whatever. But anyway, these things are going on. But generally, we want to live forever. We want to have a blissful, happy life because that is the nature of the soul. So this Amrita, the demigods are called Amrita. Not that they never die, but they live so long. It's like, and they don't think about death. They're not growing old and... you know, watching their bodies deteriorate and thinking, when will my day come, you know. Not like we are. You may not be, but I am. You know, every time you look in the mirror, you start to think, you know, what's next, you know, which tooth is going to fall out next, what's going to break down next. You know, how long can we keep going? Because the body cannot keep going forever. But the demigods is not like that. Neither is birth like that. They just somehow come into existence and everything is very nice and they just live a youthful type life and then at some point it's finished. There's no like dying, long drawn out, you know, dying and suffering and all that. And if they get this amrita, this nectar, then it's even much better. So they wanted that. So Krishna, the demons wanted it too, and in order to get it, in order to do this job of turning the ocean, they would have to work together. Neither one of them alone could manage it. Even we see that, as we read on, that even together they couldn't do it. Vishnu had to keep coming to help them in many different ways, right from the beginning. When they were carrying the mountain, they dropped it and they all got smashed, and then Vishnu had to come and pick it up and bring them all back to life, and he had to carry it. Then he had to incarnate as a tortoise to balance it, and then he had to, you know, incarnate as Sip on top to keep it. And so many things were coming out. I can just go ahead, and the story is fascinating, but the poison came out, and a very important Leela of Lord Shiva, who's the greatest devotee, that it frightened everybody. This was very, very powerful poison, and it was spreading all over the universe, and everyone became very fearful, and they took shelter of Lord Shiva. And so he agreed to drink it up, and he looked over to his wife like to ask permission, and she just said okay, because she knew that he was so powerful. So by his mystic power, he got all that poison that was spreading all over just in his hand and drank it. And that's why he has a blue neck. I remember the first picture I saw of Lord Shiva, they had him as blue. But actually, he's not blue color, he's more white, but he has a blue neck, blue, because that poison turned his neck blue when he swallowed it. Now, the so-called followers of Lord Shiva, the imitators of Lord Shiva that take intoxication, they use this and, well, he took poison, so we can also take poison. There's no scriptural evidence anywhere that Lord Shiva took any kind of intoxication, but that's what they say. But it was, he drank this poison, so they're thinking, well, we can also take poison. We're followers of Shiva. And a few drops spilled. And therefore we know that there's many poisonous snakes, and there's poisonous bugs, and there's poisonous dogs. Bite is also poison sometimes. And many poison plants, toxic, you know, plants. There's all kinds of things. And it all came from that few drops of this poison spilled over, because that's just the nature of the material world. There's nutritious, nice things, and there's poisonous things. You know, one has to be careful, like mushrooms. Some mushrooms, if you eat them, they'll instantly die. So if someone is picking mushrooms, they have to know what's what, you know. Some even little berries or something, you know, that are in the forest, they're deadly poison. And then some things are medicine. And somehow or other, you know, human beings learn this. I don't know. Sometimes they might have learned by experience, or the knowledge is just there originally from the Vedas. But all these things are there. And then it's described, this is at the end of the chapter, when Lord Shiva drank the poison, that this is the nature of great souls, that they almost always voluntarily accept suffering for the sake of the common people, for the people in general. And Lord Shiva is the Vaishnava Shambhu, he's the greatest of all the Vaishnavas, so he was showing us, and that's a devotee. He was compassionate. Of course, he wasn't really risking his life because he was Lord Shiva. Indestructible, but he was showing that, you know, he would take this risk to save the world. And that's what we're supposed to do. That's what devotees are doing. We go to a lot of trouble to try to give Krishna to the people in general, like Ratha festival. Everybody's experiencing, right? It's ecstatic, but there's a lot has to be done. Somebody has to, you know, get permission to use the road and use the plaza and
then all this cooking and, you know, getting the cart ready and inviting people and advertising and bringing devotees. So it might seem to be troublesome, a devotee, we might think, well, you know, I want to just go in Vrindavan and sit around and chant all the time. But our mood and Prabhupada's mood and Lord Chaitanya's mood is to go out. Prabhupada set the example himself. He was in Vrindavan and he was old and he was chanting all the time in Vrindavan. But he left. And he went all over the world to all kinds of places. When he was asked in London, they asked him, do devotees ever go to hell to preach? Prabhupada said, isn't London hell? And then it came in the front page of the newspaper. Swami says London is hell. He said it's always raining, the sun never shines, you know, it's dark and dreary. Although the weather is changing there as the Sankirtan movement is spreading more and more. They are getting more sunshine. But all the cities are like hell. Right? And they're getting worse. The more they so-called materially advance, the more polluted they are, and the more crowded they are, and the more crime there is, and right? The more kinds of diseases they're spreading. Hellish. It's maybe not completely hell, because in hell there's only suffering, in actual hellish planets. But now, when we're in the material world, there is pleasure and pain. Sometimes it seems like it's nice, therefore people think, well, it's okay, I'll stay here. And gradually I'll adjust my life that I can avoid all the pain and I can get only the pleasure. Maya's always telling us that if we just work a little harder, we can do that. Right? If we just get the right combination of intoxicants and things, then we won't have to get the hangover and we won't have to get, addicted, and everything will be nice. Maya's always trying to convince everybody like that. You can enjoy like anything, and they talk like that even, you know, they give those kind of promises. Because they don't know what is. Their pleasure is. In Athens I saw one cigarette, and their cigarette name was Prince. Prabhupada said, cigarette is Maya, you know, how can you smoke? There's one cigarette in America called Cool. He said, how can you smoke cool and smoke hot fire and get cool? So Prince, it means like, you know, this is high class. And then it says, trust your taste. In other words, follow your tongue. You know, your tongue knows everything. And whatever your tongue wants, you should go for it. Now, it's like I just read somebody was saying that there was somebody, I don't know, was their reporter or their sister or something. Anyway, they took him for prasadam, and this person who never tasted prasadam just took one bite and said, oh, this is the best tasting thing I ever had in my life. You know, we've seen that so many times, right? Now, have you ever heard of anybody that the first time they smoked a cigarette, you know, they said, oh, this tastes great, right? Did you ever smoke a cigarette? First time I smoked a cigarette, I thought I was going to die, and I thought I'll never, ever, will I ever do this again, and I was coughing and gagging, and the big kids were saying, oh, who's that, ho, 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 you know, ha, 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 and I felt really bad. And it was many, many years before I ever, then again later, my friends like forced me that I better smoke, otherwise, you know, I wouldn't really be one of their friends anymore. But then you have to finally get to tolerate it. It's not like taking prasadam where the first time it tastes really, really good, or the first time you chant. Almost everybody, the first time we chant, it's ecstatic. Maybe after a while, sometimes the mind says, wait a minute, your tongue is saying you need something else, you know, but we should chant. That is the higher taste, chanting the holy name, taking prasadam. This is what, you know, Lord Chaitanya has given us. And then the work, the endeavor that we go to give this to others, because we know this is the will of the Lord, and it's also we feel compassionate. Lord Shiva felt compassion for the demigods and the demons. He rescued everybody. Krishna sees that, you know, of course, even Lord Brahma, the demons and the demigods are all his children, so he's, that's how the demons can get powerful. Because when they do the tapasya, they automatically get the results by the laws of nature. You might say, well, you know, like, why did Krishna let them become powerful? But it's the material world. Of course, after Hiranyakasipu, Krishna told Lord Brahma, don't give the demons any such benedictions anymore. But Lord Brahma, later when Narada Muni was trying to find the personality that had got the most mercy of the Lord, he went to various people, then he got to Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma said, no, he said, look, I'm a rascal. He said, Krishna told me not to give benedictions to the demons, but I still do. Because he has to. It's, you know, they do the tapasya. And then the results come. But ultimately, they're always defeated because they don't take shelter of the Supreme Lord. They're inimical to the Lord. They think they can kill the Lord. Hiranyakasipu, Ravana, they all thought they could kill Kamsa. Kamsa he was scared to death of a little baby. And Kamsa had actually defeated Indra. He was very powerful. But somehow he was so fearful of Krishna that he never went, you know, he thought because of that prediction that he would be killed, but he never, you know, personally went to try to fight with Krishna. He was sending all this to my friend. Shigorni Tai Kija. And then he would get more and more distressed as each one of the big demons would be killed by this little child. And he still, like, you know, he couldn't understand that Krishna was the Supreme Lord, couldn't accept that. He's thinking he is more powerful. Hiranyakasipu, when Prahlad, you know, said he got his power from Vishnu, and Hiranyakasipu was furiously angry. No, no, I am God. Everybody worships me. And they did. Because he was so powerful. And out of fear, even the demigods were, you know, submissive to Hiranyakasipu. Only Narada Muni was aloof from it, but they said he would even pretend. You know, he wasn't really afraid of Hiranyakasipu. He knew who he was, and he knew that he would be defeated ultimately. But a demon can become very, very powerful. In the material world now, there's so many. Of course, there's nobody that even rules the whole earth. Even the biggest so-called rulers, they're ruling small countries, and they don't last very long in their powerful positions. Either they elect it out of office, or they get killed, or, you know, something. They can cheat and steal so much. Somebody, a devotee from Africa, sent me pictures of one governor, I guess, of some governor in one state in Nigeria. He had in his house huge closets full of money, you know, that he'd been, and the whole state was totally impoverished. And there was like a pile this high and as big as this room of $100 bills. And then there was a whole closet completely full of money. But somehow they caught him, you know. They said that he transferred the bank to his house or something. But he was so puffed up just because he had the position and the ability to cheat that much that he thought he could actually keep all that money in his house and not get caught. But this is how the demons are. They think that, you know, they become so powerful and they have so many followers. And, you know, Ravana had defeated everyone and he took the benediction. Of course, he's the same person as Hiranyakasipu, same soul. And he took similar benediction. But he said, I don't need a benediction for humans because humans are so weak. I don't have to worry about that. So Krishna took the form of a human. He'd even thought he defeated Yamaraj. You know that story? At one time when Ravana was conquering the universe, he actually went to Earth. And there was a few earthly kings that were very, very, you know, courageous, and they tried to fight him, but they didn't have a chance. And then Narada Muni came and said, you know, Ravana, this is not really suitable for a man of your stature to fight these humans. They're very, you know, they're suffering so much already. He said they're weak, they're short-lived, they're attached to their families, you know, like they're suffering so much. Why do you want to fight them? It's embarrassing. It's like a, you know, it just doesn't look good. You should fight someone more powerful. You should go and fight with Yamaraj. That'd be more suitable. So Ravana got very, yes, that's right, you know, and he took off. And they went to the kingdom of Yamaraj. And, you know, there was huge fighting. The soldiers of Yamaraj were coming out, and you know, they were fighting. And you know, and finally, Ravana got pretty close to Yamaraj, and Yamaraj came out with his Yamadanda, the rod of death. He was going to kill Ravana. And there was another demigod, Mitra, who's a close associate of Ravana. He said, let me do it, but no, Yamaraj said, no, I'm going to kill him myself. So he actually had the, like a spear, I guess, he had it back. And then Lord Brahma came and grabbed his hand and said, no, you can't do it because I promised him that no demigod could kill him. So we can't go against my promise. So Yamaraj said, all right. So Ravana went away feeling really puffed up, and you know, I have defeated Yamaraj. There's no way now; nothing can touch me. You know, nothing can touch me. So he was so proud. And then he had to watch, like, as you know, first Hanuman came and killed a couple of his sons and a couple of his big generals, and then the whole army came. And you know, one by one, all his sons and all his brothers and all his big generals were getting killed. And he kept thinking the next one is going to finish off this army. But finally, he himself had to go out and fight, and then he was killed. The pride of, you know, and he was the most learned and the most rich, and he came from a good family, but of demons, but they can't win this anti-Krishna mentality. But they never give up. Although now, by the mercy of, like this thing about the talking about how beef is so nutritious and milk is so bad. And that they're pretty effective on trying to convince people that milk is bad. But more and more people are starting to think that beef is not so healthy. But then the demons just push beef into countries like Asia where they never ate beef very much. And tell the people it's really good. McDonald's goes in there, they bring in the cows and everything, and they get them eating it. But we are, you know, trying to nullify the teaching of the demons by the Sankirtan movement, by, you know, chanting the holy name, public chanting of the holy name, this is the Dharma of the age. It is the topmost, like, spiritual activity. It's congregational chanting of the holy name. And Jiva Goswami wrote that in the congregational chanting of the holy name, the anarthas are not considered. It's just so beneficial for everyone. So Lord Chaitanya, that's what he was doing daily. That's what he sent his followers out daily to chant the holy name publicly, to give you know, this nectar to everyone. And we're seeing it. When I was in Israel one time, I was at the Dead Sea, and I saw the one girl at the lifeguard stand. And first I was thinking, oh, look at that, because those Israeli people, they're not very modest. You know. But then she said, oh, are you a Hare Krishna? So I said, yeah, are you? And she said, well, maybe, I don't know, I might be or something. So it turned out that she had, one time she was in Amsterdam and just walking around Amsterdam, and somehow the Rath Yatra, you know, was going, and she joined in. So then she, you know, she got exposed. She was actually trying to study Ayurveda also, but, you know, that's how she got exposed to devotees. She joined the kirtan, she got prasadam, and then, so she's, you know, attracted, still remembering, still chanting sometimes, still liking devotees. So that is the effect, and we see everywhere we go for public chanting, how the people like it. And sometimes we wonder about all these pictures that people take, you know, because now everybody has a camera, every phone has a camera. You know, everybody's got taking pictures when Harinam goes by. Now. In Poland, we were going on the beach, and like, you know, everybody's standing there with their cameras, and movie cameras, and telephone cameras, and digital cameras. And Indra Dhanmar said, some of them, they call their friend and they let them hear the kirtan.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they ring somebody and hold the phone so that, because they just, it's so attractive. Even if they don't know what it is. And nowadays, like, you know, not enough people have seen that. Like, it's not like it was in the good old days when we had everybody out in Harinam all the time. And people knew us very much, but we want to get more and more people out. We want to get public exposure. Some devotees from Poland, I think it was, they came to London to study advertising. And in the advertising class, they were going over the different elements of an advertisement, like color and sound and movement, and I don't know, there's many different elements. And in the presentation, the professor showed a little movie of a Harinam, and he said this is an example of all the elements of an advertisement. You know, this is like a perfect advertisement. It's got everything. So it doesn't cost anything. You know the big signboards that the cigarette companies put up and all those things, they're very expensive. Right, television commercials and everything. But the Harinam, it practically doesn't cost us anything. In fact, many times we get donations. People just come and give donations. We've seen that. Even in Tel Aviv, one time we went, I don't know if it was Sunday or Monday. Sunday's the Monday of Israel. So we just went on one little corner there where there's a big shopping walking street, many, many people. And it was a very small group. There was like three or four of us. And we were just chanting without any amplifier or anything. And we had a little box in front. And so many people just gave donations. Even, you know, Jewish religious people just look and they just come and give something. You know. We got 70 shekels. You know, just a couple of hours of just sitting there. So it didn't cost anything. We walked, you know, for 10 minutes to get there. But it's very powerful, and people remember it. So many people take pictures. You know, sometimes they ask us what we're doing. They get books. And that's anywhere in the world. The soul is attracted to this. So this is Lord Chaitanya's movement. We're not killing demons. We don't have to, you know, in most cases, we don't have to physically fight demons. They're not attacking us in that way. They're using their own propaganda methods to spread demoniac life. So everywhere they're promoting more and more illicit sex and gambling, intoxication, like they have that casino in the airport here and they advertise, you know, if you're going through Amsterdam, you know, take a rest, have a break, come to our casino, you know, enjoy your life, enjoy yourself while you're laid over. And people do. They think it's fun, gambling, hoping that they might win, they might get something for nothing. But the odds are not in the favor, actually, but they can't understand. Everywhere they're advertising, you know, intoxication, especially illicit sex, every advertisement is promoting that in very unsubtle ways. So the demons are hard at work misleading people. But they're also confused. I just watched a few minutes of that movie that you had, The Mysteries of the Universe or whatever it is. So it was saying, it gave a little thing about the Hindu version, you know, the ocean of milk and the elephants holding up the universe and some, you know, the few different bits and pieces. And then they said, but this is no more crazy than the scientific explanation. They actually said that their explanation also is totally, you know, beyond anybody's understanding. And of course, if they really, really get into the Vedic explanation, it all makes a lot of sense. But ultimately, one has to understand that behind it all, there's the Supreme Lord who's creating everything, and that this material universe is not the real thing. There's a spiritual world, and in this material world, everything is changing all the time, and everything is, you know, inconceivable. They're trying to make us understand it. They were showing how big some of the other planets are, and, you know, what temperatures there are on other planets, and how hot it gets, and how cold it gets, and how strong the winds blow, and how all the conditions here are like really nothing, you know. So that's interesting. We should understand that we're not very significant. One time Srila Prabhupada, that was with His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj, a long time ago, and he was the temple president or something, and he was, you know, very influential in the movement, in the small world of Hare Krishna at the time, a few temples in America. And Prabhupada called him in and he said, you know, he started to talk about the whole universe, and then he said, within this universe there's, you know, the Earth planet, and on the Earth planet there's the USA, and in the USA there's California. You know, it's getting smaller and smaller, and in California there's Los Angeles, and then in Los Angeles there's this house, and in this house is Tamal Krishna thinking he's very important. And that's how we are. We're thinking, well, I'm so important, you know, because we don't see very far beyond our little environment. And so Maya keeps people, you know, enlivened to try to enjoy the material world. I think they're very powerful. But what in the universe, what, you know, even in Amsterdam, what are they? What to speak of in the universe, what is this planet? But the one thing about this Earth planet, according to Lord Brahma, is it's the best opportunity for the best birth is to be on the Earth planet in the human body, because there's this opportunity then to do bhakti yoga and to actually get out from the entire material entanglement. It's superior in that way to the demigod. Even though the demigod body is materially far superior in beauty and in lifespan and health and, you know, intelligence and all those things. But for spiritual opportunities, the human body on earth is much better. And it's desirable, even demigods want it. For that reason, especially now, because of the Sankirtan movement, and, you know, it can join. join the Sankirtan movement, join in the Harinam Sankirtan. We can read Srimad Bhagavatam, we can associate with devotees. All these are very, like, amazing opportunities. And then we see how, I was just reading that book about different devotees who left their body, and that one Mataji in France who was in a car accident and was dying, obviously, and she told the ambulance people, I'm going to die and I'm going to pray now, and she just started chanting and she left her body. And then even the newspaper wrote about it, how, you know, how amazing it was. Because the ambulance driver was completely shocked to see that. That he'd seen so many people die, but he never saw everybody's freaking out, you know, screaming and saying, help me, save me, you know. And she just said, don't, you know, I'm going to die, and Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So they wrote a big article in the newspaper, you know, and how great Prabhupada was that this girl in such a short time coming from an ordinary background could have made something, become so advanced spiritually. And we've seen that even sometimes children, all kinds of devotees, somehow or other, you know, when it comes down to it, they become peaceful and able to just think of Krishna. So we want to spread that everywhere. We want to help people. We want to save people from the influence of Kali, who's, you know, trying very hard to convince people that they are their body and that, you know, to gratify the senses until the end of life is the goal of life. And, you know, they're very effectively teaching this now Darwin. It's some kind of anniversary of Darwin, and they have all these big exhibitions of the glories of Darwin that they're putting out all over the world. You know, and Darwin was, I remember when we first heard Prabhupada, we couldn't understand why Prabhupada is so much against Darwin, you know, because we had been taught that Darwin was such a great scientist. And really, but he was, you know, his teaching is like the essence of all atheism, godlessness. And they're promoting, like, what a great soul he was. But at the same time now, there's all kinds of, you know, knowledge coming out more and more and being taught that his teachings are not. Even he himself rejected his own theory, but still they promoted. When I was in school, they always called it the theory of evolution. But now they don't, they never say theory anymore. Right? Mm-hmm. They just say evolution. Evolution did this, evolution that, evolution this, because of evolution. They just present it as absolute fact. The one big demon that writes all the big book about, you know, that there's no God, he says that evolution can, you know, can create things that are so complex and that it can look like there must be a creator behind it, but really there's not. It just looks that way, but actually evolution explains everything, he says, but then he can't explain it. But the common people, they can get bewildered by their scientific jargon or double talk and, you know, and atheism means that there's no next life, you don't have to answer to any kind of authority, and you can do whatever you want. You can enjoy, nothing matters. So that's attractive to fallen conditioned souls. But what everybody really wants is happiness. That is the nature of the soul. So when they hear the holy name, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Then they become happy, become purified. And they revive their natural spiritual condition. So we should go on reading this Bhagavatam. And it's, every time we read it, it's more and more blissful. This particular lila is quite fascinating. Just in Bali, the devotees just did a dance drama of this lila. It's really amazing, actually. There was like 30 or 40 devotees, and the demons came in, and, you know, they did the following his dance and with the